But what lies beneath is the real truth. I'm unlovable. I'm not enough. And that's why I can never find love or be a success. But let me just find something to blame it on, and it's a little less painful.
Mm.
That the real what lies beneath is I'm not worthy. I'm not enough. I'm not lovable.
If beating yourself up were an Olympic sport, then I think a lot of us would be gold medalists. And the winning prize to every participant? Regular negative reminders that you are not good enough. Yep, that actually comes gold-plated and all. You see, we tell ourselves that that's why we had that failed relationship. That's why we overindulged in food. That's why we snapped to our friend. Because, well, we're not good enough. And that thinking, the words we use, the words we choose, only feeds the monster that is our bullying mind. And so today's Women of Impact is back by popular demand to show us exactly how to slay those dragons. With over 30 years of expertise in psychotherapy, hypnotherapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, and neuro-linguistics programming, this speaker, expert, author, entrepreneur, and global phenomenon is about to show us how we can stop beating ourselves up and start lifting ourselves up. The founder of I Am Enough Movement, the one and only great British pioneer, my girl, Marissa Peer. Welcome to the show again. I'm so happy to have you.
Oh, I'm great to be here.
So where I wanted to start is we always talk about feelings. I feel sad, I'm frustrated. It's always about the feeling. But I've got an amazing quote of yours that you broke down. Thoughts dictate feelings. Your feelings dictate your actions, and your actions dictate your events. But here's the thing, we always focus on the feeling, not the thought.
Yeah.
But I love that you say everything stems from there.
Yeah.
So talk to me about that.
Because people say feelings come before thoughts. No, they don't. If I had a big plate of meat in front of you, what you think about that, it comes affects the feeling. If you're a vegan, it's disgusting. If you're a bodybuilder, it's great. If I hold up a needle, it's the thought, oh, that's going to hurt, that's going to make me look 10 years younger, that's going to make me high, I'm going to have a tattoo. So we all believe that we can't control our feelings. When you get it right, thoughts control feelings. The thought comes before the feeling. When you go backwards again, it's like, so if everything starts with a thought, it's easier to change your thoughts than to change your feelings. And if you just keep changing your thoughts, what happens is it actually starts to change your entire life. So for instance, you might have a feeling. What is it? Is it scared or is it excited? I don't know, because they feel exactly the same. If you watch someone on a roller coaster screaming, are they scared or excited? They don't even know. But you get to choose to go, I'm excited, I'm feeling great, or I'm terrified and I'm falling apart. And when you can start to think about what you're feeling and decide to make it feel good. I'm feeling challenged. I'm feeling all right about this. I'm feeling I can do it. I've got this tingling in my toes. What is that, terror or excitement? Well, I don't know, but I'm going to tell myself it's excitement. Then you're going to win at life all the time because you get to be in control. Instead of saying I'm run by my feelings.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Okay, so knowing that, how do we then start to change that thought pattern?
Well, again, everything comes, the way you feel about everything, you see, the way you feel about something is down to two things, the pictures you make in your head and the words you say to yourself. And you could even cut that down and say the way you feel is down to the words. So we use these amazing words, terrifying, it's killing me, I'm dying. And you've got to change the words. That's challenging, that's interesting, that's fascinating. And stop saying, it's killing me. Oh, I look a mess. I look terrible. I've got a memory like a sieve. I'm going out of my mind. You think, oh, well, if I'm prepared to lie, why don't I just tell myself a better lie? I look a little dehydrated. I look a little sleep deprived. And when you start to tell yourself a better lie, sort of saying, I'm terrified, I'm challenged. This is driving me mad. This is a situation. Your whole life changes on a dime because you realize, oh, I was lying to myself and it felt real. So at least I'm going to lie to myself in a good way and it will feel real.
I love that so much. And you, I heard you break it down even more to the point where it's like, look, if a guy looks at a porno, he gets an erection.
Yeah.
If a woman or anyone feels embarrassed, they blush.
Yeah.
So making that the mental connection with the body is so strong. So explain to me if I'm, because someone might even say, well, what's the big difference? I'm saying I could eat a horse, I'm starving. Like, why does that actually matter? Can you break that down to how your body then responds?
So the only way your mind knows how you feel is the word used. If one more guy dumps me, it will kill me. If one more client challenges me, it'll be the end of me. If one more client sends back my product, I'll kill myself. So now what my mind has worked out is that my business is killing me. If I say this job will be the death of me, this commute is killing me, this client makes me want to die, my mind, which can only work out what I'm feeling through my words, only my words, nothing but my words, will go, that place called job is killing you. My job is to keep you alive. So why don't I give you a lovely ulcer or panic attacks or a phobia? Now you can't leave the house and go to that place called job that is killing you. And I see this time and time again with clients who come in and say, you know, I've got a sensitivity, I can't leave the house. I've got sensitivity to light or all these allergies. And when we talk more, they go, when I was bullied when I was 11, what did you think? They went, well, I thought, I wish I could never leave the house. I never realized I'd make myself unable to leave the house. I thought a thought and it's become real. Because thoughts become real. As you said, when you think an emotional thought, tears leak out of your eyes and you're just watching television.
A commercial.
You think an embarrassing thought and you get embarrassed. You look at a picture that's just dots and get aroused. Because thoughts are real. We all know we think about food and our stomach rumbles. We sit in the movies. I'm not hungry, but there's a picture of food. Oh, I could eat a horse. I'm starving. And these are wrong thoughts, by the way, because nobody could eat a horse, even a quarter of it. And in this country, you're unlikely to have ever been truly starving. So we think a thought, and every thought you think causes a physical reaction, like blushing. It also causes an emotional response. And everything goes back to thought. So when you can take control of your thoughts, you really can make your life extraordinary. But you have to see your mind as like a big racehorse. And you're a driver who's never been on a horse before and goes, I don't even know how to make this horse go where I want it to go. But if you have some horse riding lessons, you get on a powerful horse and you know, do that with your knees, you do that with your hands, and you kind of give the horse signals and it goes exactly where you want it to go. But you have to learn the signals to give the horse. I mean, the first time I rode a horse, I didn't realize it's all to do with your knees and your calves and you're sending signals to the horse. And it's the same with the mind. You just have to understand that it's sending you signals because you sent it signals. I could never speak in public. I don't like confrontation. I can't do rejection. I could write a book, but what if everybody hated it? I could do that, but what if it went wrong? And it's like biofeedback. So if you send yourself better signals, you get better results. And now that horse will go where you want it to go. Because you're driving something very powerful, but you know what to do with your knees and your hands. But the thing about the brain that you really should be taught in school is that we are hardwired to return to what is familiar and to resist what is unfamiliar. So if you've never had praise, no one's ever said, oh my God, you're so great, look at you, but said, oh, you'll never amount to anything. When someone says, wow, you're great, go, what are you talking about? I haven't even combed my hair. Oh, this thing, I've had it for 5 years. It was second hand. And if we've never had praise and it's unfamiliar, we reject it and add in what is familiar, the criticism. And that's the most damaging thing I see, people who can't accept praise. Hey, I read your book. It was terrible, wasn't it? No, it was great. Didn't you notice the spelling mistake? No. I came to see you speak. Oh, did you notice I got it all wrong? I stuttered on it. No. Oh, well, let me tell you then how bad I was. And just getting those people to stop criticizing themselves and to praise themselves a lot is transformational. But it's so important to see that we're wired to return to what's familiar. That's a fact. But here's another fact. You can make anything you like familiar. Because if you couldn't, you'd still be peeing in your pants. You'd still be trying to eat a banana and getting it in your ear or your hair. People get rid of really good stuff if it's unfamiliar, which is why 70% of lottery winners are dead broke in 3 years. If you are not used to money and you get it, it's almost guaranteed you'll get rid of it all. because A, you didn't feel you earned it, but B, it's just not familiar.
Oh, there's so much you just said there. So I've heard a lot, like everyone goes back to the familiar.
Yeah.
So there's actually two things there. There's one of how do you identify what that familiar is so that you can mm-hmm. change it?
Yeah.
And then second of all, some people go the opposite way. Mm-hmm. So for instance, my mum was brought up in a convent with nuns.
Yeah.
And at a very young age, I mean, they were very strict, right?
Of course.
And so at a very young age, she said to herself, when I have kids, I'm going to give them every ounce of love. And mm-hmm. she completely switched into the complete opposite. So A, what is even happening there? Mm. And is there a way of getting them when they're young? Or is it just, you just have to, as you get older, recognize when something isn't serving you and then do what you're saying?
Well, it's a bit of both, actually. When you get older and you're thinking a thought, you have to stop and think, hey, where did this thought come from? Who gave me this thought? And why am I thinking this thought? Like my grandmother, if you walked into the house with a packet of Tampax in your hand, that she would go bright red and go, no, put that away. Nobody wants to know about that. That was like something so dirty and forbidden, and you never mentioned the P word. And now we're a generation where it's totally normal. So stop and ask a question. Why do I believe this belief? Who told me that belief? What did they know? Where did they learn it? And so question where these beliefs come from and then just give them up. And the second thing about some people naturally rebellious, well, some people are, because remember, the nuns didn't give birth to your mother. They just raised her. So she had a home life and a school life. And often they're very conflicted. And we often think, when I grow up, I'm never going to, I'm going to do the opposite. You either end up doing exactly the same or the polar opposite. Mm. Often it's better to do the opposite.
Yeah. I've actually heard you say there are three things that really a child needs: feeling loved, feeling significant, and having purpose.
Yeah.
What have you noticed in people that haven't had all three of those?
Yeah. Children have very simple needs, and your job is to meet those needs. Doesn't matter how much organic broccoli you give them or teach them Mandarin. If you're not meeting your child's need for significance mm-hmm. and safety and being proud of them, then you haven't really succeeded. I know that's hard to hear, and certainly as a parent, I got so much of it wrong. But when the need isn't met, we go into the world and two things happen. First, we have a belief. I never felt safe. I never felt loved. I never felt I mattered. And we have a tag. It will always be that way. It will be that way for the rest of my life. That's the first thing. The second thing is, because our parents couldn't meet our need, we become needy. We go, hey, Lisa, could you make me feel good about myself? Could you be my new best friend and tell me I'm great? Or, hey, could you date me or employ me? And could you do the job of filling up my unmet needs? We'll go, sure, I could do that. I'll be your new best friend or your girlfriend or your boyfriend. But in 3 years, I'm moving on. I'm going to find someone taller than you, younger than you, so I can do that for a while. And then the minute they leave, or maybe they pass away, we're back to going, oh, I've got to find someone else and go, hey, could you now take this need? But when you sit back and go, okay, what's my need? I never felt significant. Can I do it? Because the best thing you can do to yourself, bar none, is to sit down and write out, okay, I want to feel significant. I want to feel I matter. I want to feel my parents are proud of me. So I'm going to sit and go, hey, I'm significant. I matter. My parents are proud of me. Say it over and over and over again. And it's so weird. It happens so fast. So now the bit that was empty is filled, but nobody can ever take it away because you did it.
I love that so much. So you were saying, so you say it, and then are there things that you can put in place to say like, okay, I want to feel significant, so I'm going to do this because that's what's going to make me feel significant?
It's more important to just say, I am significant. Okay. You see, when you quantify, I'm lovable because I'm a size 8. I'm lovable because I'm important because I'm earning money. I'm significant because I've got this job. So it has to be you, not what you do or wear or own or buy, not what you add in or take away. There's nothing to be snipped off or injected in or dyed in or bleached in. It has to be, I am significant now. So When I was growing up, my father was this headmaster. My brother went to private school. He was the smart one. My sister was the beautiful little baby, and I just felt like this thing, this blob. I didn't feel attractive or smart because my brother was he had the smart role. My sister had the cute role, so I just didn't have a role. And interesting, those people tend to be the carers, so that wasn't surprising. But one day I realized that I wanted to be the favorite. So I started to go, I'm the favorite, I'm the favorite, I'm the favorite. So I started to say it. And of course, the thing with the mind is it doesn't know if that's true or not. And it really doesn't care. Whatever you say to your mind, it lets in. I'm an idiot. I'm so smart. I'm unlovable. I'm magnetically lovable. It doesn't stop to think, is that real? It just lets it in. So the most amazing thing that happened is I just written my first book and I did an interview in somewhere like the New York Times and my name was everywhere. And suddenly my dad was like, oh my God, I'm so proud of you. Oh my God, you're my favorite child. I even said that word.
Oh,
and I
wow.
thought, do you know, this is so weird. I've wanted this my whole life and now I've got it. It didn't mean a thing. I'm thinking, actually, now I feel uncomfortable because this is so rude to my brother and sister. They haven't done anything to deserve being ignored. And then the penny clicked. Oh, you see, I've done it myself for so long that now he's doing it is very much surplus to requirements. What I wanted my whole life. Mm. When I got it, I didn't need it. And it didn't mean what I thought it would mean because I'd already done it years before. And so you might as well tell yourself amazing stuff because it's very likely to become real. Same thing, sadly, with negative stuff. It's like, I can't do it, I can do it. You know, I was at the CNN Tower in Toronto several years ago and they have a whole glass floor and I walked up and people were like freak out, crying, sitting on the floor going, I can't do it because they were all looking down. But the floor is completely safe. It's the picture you make of falling. Many people walk to the edge of a building and their stomach drops, even though there's a plate glass window, because of the pictures you make. And you can only go up high and do stuff when you make a different picture. This is completely safe. This is fine. This is exciting. This is thrilling. I love this. I am safe. I'm safe here. But if you say the opposite, I'm not safe. I'm going to fall. I'm going to die. Then you're actually terrifying yourself only with one thing. The thoughts you're thinking, the words you're putting in your head, the pictures you're making.
Yeah, that's so strong. And I didn't actually really know all of that when I first got married. Mm-hmm. But even when my husband and I first got married, we always swore we wouldn't even joke about divorce. We call it the D word in the family. And it was almost like it was just one of those things that it just didn't feel right to even tease each other in a lighthearted way. And after hearing everything you're saying, like it all makes very much sense because I'm telling myself by not even saying that word, based on everything that you're saying, that to me, divorce, and it's not that it's not an option, because if my husband laid a finger on me or cheated on me, I would divorce him in a heartbeat.
Sure.
So I've told him it is an option. Mm. But apart from that, it isn't an option.
Yeah.
Like he gets really badly burned. He gets paralyzed. Like to me, divorce isn't an option. Mm. Like, so we just know that and it's kind of like a reminder of our connection that it can't be broken.
Yeah. And you're so clever because I saw so many clients who tell me this same story. My mum used to pack her bags, walk out and go, I'm not coming back. My mum left me in a store, obviously drove around and came back. But she told me she would leave me if I didn't shape up. I'll leave you. I'm off if you don't behave. And I saw the damage that did. And I remember when I got married, saying, I'll never say to my husband, I'm leaving you if you do that. Mm. I'm off if you do that. If you do that again, I'm divorcing you. Because it's a game you play, but you absolutely threaten a relationship when you threaten to leave, when you say to your kid or your partner or even your friends, well, I don't like you if you're doing that, so I'm going to leave you. Never threaten to leave unless you really want to leave. Don't play games. Mm-hmm. Be honest. Tell people what you want, especially in a relationship. What do you want? People say, well, I don't want to say in case I get rejected. Then you get rejected because, well, I never knew you wanted that. You never told me. I never knew I disappointed you in bed. I had no idea that every time I didn't stack the dishwasher, you were seething inside. I didn't know it bugged you so much. So you have to have enough of yourself to go, hey, this is what I want. And this, because in relationships, women especially think the perfect guy is psychic. He knows what to do in bed. He knows exactly what gift to get you. He knows you're having a bad day and it's your period. And then when he doesn't, he doesn't care. Mm. See, now we're lying to ourselves. This is another lie. He doesn't care because he forgot my birthday. He doesn't care because I'm on my period. And he doesn't even understand I'm in pain. He doesn't care. So that's a lie. It's like, oh, he does care, he just doesn't understand. And you have to tell people, hey, this is a need I have. This is important to me.
If you own your own business, when an employee leaves your company, whether on good terms or bad, it can feel, I hate to say it, but it actually can feel personal, like you and you alone are the one to blame. And it actually may even trigger you to lock down your business, not open yourself up and not actually risk trying anyone else. Like you actually would your heart after a bad breakup and avoid looking for that new partner altogether. Well, let's face it, sometimes we can do that with hires as well. And trust me, guys, I've been there. I get the thought of bringing in a new stranger into your business actually fills your heart with more anxiety than it does love and joy. But when you post your jobs on LinkedIn, you can actually feel the confidence that you will find the right person for the right job fast, because LinkedIn isn't actually just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion with a B professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. Because guys, it gives you access to professionals that you actually can't find anywhere else. And so LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive, which then makes hiring with confidence easy when you have that many quality candidates. And it's so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get qualified candidates within 24 hours. So post your jobs for free at linkedin.com/Lisa. That's linkedin.com/Lisa to post your job for utterly free. And of course, terms and conditions always apply. As an entrepreneur, one of the biggest challenges you will face is a negative voice in your head. You know who I'm talking about? That maybe not so small part of you that loudly doubts your abilities to actually pull the things off and make a living from your passion project. But you gotta overcome that negative voice in your head, homie, because I'm telling you, you can do it. Especially if you use Shopify. Now, Shopify is an all-in-one global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From launching your business to hitting $1 million, Shopify has got you completely covered. And with all the built-in Magic AI award-winning customer service and the internet's best converting checkout, you have everything you need to shut down the voice of doubt and make all your amazing business dreams a reality. That's exactly why, guys, I love Shopify. So if you want to start growing your business with more customers and sales, shut that negative voice down and prove her wrong that you can do it, Shopify is here for you. So go and sign up for just $1 a month with your trial period at shopify.com/Lisa, all lowercase. Again, guys, you can go to shopify.com/Lisa right now to grow your business, no matter where you are and what stage it's in. That's shopify.com/Lisa.
Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Check out our great selection of garage and utility lighting options in stock, ready to take home today. We carry everything to help you illuminate whatever project you're working on. Shop garage and utility lighting products in store at your nearest Menards. You can also view all of our entire selection of lighting options today on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
So when you're saying he doesn't care, what is that actually doing internally to you on how that, like, how does that actually affect the relationship?
Yeah, so the minute you tell yourself a lie or a story, my partner doesn't care because he's always home late. He doesn't care because he eats this lovely dinner, sits, doesn't even put his plate in the sink. You're telling yourself a story, but you see, now you put the word in your head, he doesn't care, she doesn't, they don't care. And now it's becoming real. And remember, we've gone back again to the way you feel is down to the thoughts you think, they don't care about me. Mm. So, you know, one day my husband, I mean, he's absolutely lovely, but he would sometimes go to bed, he'd just go to bed. And one day I said to him, you know, I know you love me, but when you go to bed and don't even lock the doors, I feel really uncared for. Mm. I like to be protected. And that worked. Now every night locks all the doors, checks everything, because I didn't go, I know you don't care about me. You just go to bed and leave me here because you don't love me and you don't care. I said, I know you care and I know you'd love me to feel safe. So would you do this? And we still often have to start with, like, I know you care about me. I know I'm important to you. Would you please put your phone on when I'm telling you something important? Would you, my husband says to me, would you please turn your phone over when I'm talking to you? Because it's a two-way thing. Would you shut the lid of your computer? So when you have a sense of yourself and can tell people, they tend to will do it, because most people want to, most men want to please their partners, most women want to please their partners. But if you don't tell people, now you tell yourself, as well, they don't care. They're so thoughtless, they're so selfish, they're so whatever they are. And now you've filled up your head again. It always comes back to the way you feel is down to the words you're saying. And you could just say, well, look, I know they care. So why are they doing this? Well, maybe they really don't know. You know, one of my clients, every year her husband is such into recycling. He gave her the same Christmas card. He just put it back every year and re-gave it to her until she said, that's it. I'm about to recycle you. If I get one more recycled card, you're going to get recycled next. But he had no idea that it bothered her. He thought it was a great idea. Why buy another one? Why put all that paper into landfill? It's got a nice message. She likes it. Just give it to her every year. And sometimes we wait so long to tell people, that really drives me crazy. You have to be super honest with what you want. But then to be honest, you have to have a sense of yourself that, well, I'm worthy of expressing my needs. Surely I deserve telling people what I need. Then they can meet my needs. But we're so scared of rejection. That's the biggest thing I see with people. We are, you know, 500 years ago, the thing that would kill you apart from hunger was rejection. You know, we lived in big groups. We took a whole tribe to be safe. They had to man the fort or man the little tribal gathering. And you could not survive on your own. And if you messed up and they banished you or cast you out, now you're on your own in the wilderness. That's it, you're pretty much finished. So we have this fear that rejection will kill us. It won't. It feels like it will, but it won't. So rejection is a tool that we understand. We're wired to be terrified of it. And all the things we do are to get it, to get people to like us. And we've forgotten that now that it doesn't kill us, if you can just like yourself, you'll never feel rejected, ever. Doesn't mean people won't leave you, but you won't feel like you're going to die from rejection.
Yeah. I've heard you talk about where you ask people what lies beneath.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
So I always tell people, if you want to be a great therapist, remember that the presenting problem is not the problem. Here am I, and I'm addicted to sugar. Here am I, I'm a drug addict. I'm an alcoholic. You need to look for what lies beneath. And we teach all of our graduates to look for what lies beneath and treat that. Because if you treat alcoholism, okay, you came in, you're alcoholic, I fixed that. But now they still have the same feeling that made them drink, which is almost always, I'm not enough. And if I'm not enough, I need more. I need more alcohol, more drugs, more food, more sex, more shopping, more something, more praise. And when you treat the I am not enough, and I am enough, all the offshoots of I'm not enough, the hoarding, the shopping, the binging, go away anyway. So I'm always looking at what lies beneath. Here comes a person saying, you know, I can't find love. I need to lose weight, or I need to do something. I need to change how I look. And usually that's not the problem. Here comes someone that says, I've got all these self-destructive habits and I sabotage myself. Can you just fix that? Well, I could. But why do you sabotage yourself? And then when you peel away the layers, up comes the truth. I feel not good enough. I'm so scared of failing. But if I sabotage myself, I can say, you know what? I coulda, woulda, shoulda. But you see, I had this sabotaging. I was always 30 pounds over. I had this drinking problem. And that's why I could never find love or be a success. But what lies beneath is the real truth. I'm unlovable. I'm not enough. And that's why I can never find love or be a success. But let me just find something to blame it on, and it's a little less painful. The real what lies beneath is I'm not worthy. I'm not enough. I'm not lovable. So I always treat what lies beneath, because when you do that, you fix someone forever. And it's so nice. And not only that, those people become better parents, better partners, better friends, better employees, better employers. So it has a really lovely ripple effect.
Mm, yeah, I love that. Talk to me about RTT.
Mm-hmm.
Break that down for me and how people can use it for themselves.
Yeah, so when I became a therapist, I've always challenged other people's beliefs, and I just didn't understand how therapy should be so long. I looked at other treatments, thought no one says to the dentist, hey, my tooth aches, can I discuss it for a year? I seem to have cracked my knee in terrible pain. Could I come and discuss that for a whole year? So I always wanted to find a technique which could dismantle pain, not just physical pain, the emotional pain, because that's pain too, the mental pain, the pain of having something like anxiety or panic attacks or depression. And I realized that I could do that very fast if I treat what lies beneath. And therapy isn't wrong, but I looked at it and thought, how could I simplify this? Because what people want is to get out of pain fast. So I thought, how could I get people out of pain fast? But it also has to be permanent. And I tell all my grads, there's only three things wrong with everyone in the world. I mean, once you're not going through hunger and poverty in a modern place like America, like England, like France, like Sweden, when you're not starving and you have shelter, there's only three things wrong with anyone, including you and me. The first one is I'm not enough. And if I'm not enough, I can't get enough. I need more praise, more something. And so many addictions, in fact, almost all of them are run by not enough. The second thing wrong with people is I'm different, so I can't connect. See, when we lived in a tribe, we never felt different. So, oh, that's my great aunt, that's my cousin, we look the same. We didn't have that difference. But we've also known that the runt of the litter, or the albino, always suffered because they were different. And now we live in multicultural worlds, so it's very easy to think, no, I feel different, I'm not the same. But the truth is, if your greatest fear is to be different, and that's everyone's greatest fear, what does that mean? It means you're the same. You're the same as everyone. And so many children need to be told, you're the same, you're unique, but you're the same as it. Nobody is better than you. You're the same. And then the third thing is a very interesting one, which is I want something and I'm going to pursue it, but I know it's not available. I want love. My dad left where I was born, so I'm unlovable. I want health, but my whole family have got the depressed gene or the alcoholic gene. I want money, but I never went to college and no one in my family has money. My dad's gone bankrupt 3 times. So this, it's like running with someone holding a big elastic band around you. It's not available. And so when you can fix those three things, you are the same, and therefore you can connect. You are enough. And what you want wants you and is available to you. You actually fix every single problem people have. Everything is fixed by identifying and fixing those three things. And that's one of the cores of RTT, is that let's fix what lies beneath. There's only those three things. Let's give you the power to feel good about yourself, to think about what do you need to hear. Well, put those words into yourself. Forgive yourself, fall in love with yourself. Don't think, well, when I have love, I'll be happy. And then, well, I need a baby now. I need something else. Because our potential expands as we move towards it. So nobody can know what their potential is. But you have to keep going into expansion yourself. And when you move your mind to new dimensions, it never moves back. But it goes back again. You have to do it yourself. You can't give someone else the agency to make you feel good about you.
I love that. Where does role, function, and purpose fit into RTT? How can we use that?
Role, function, and purpose is actually, even with tiny children, it's really talking about what is the role of this illness? You've had it for years. It doesn't appear to want to go away. It keeps coming back. Obviously, there's some reason why it's there. Every time I had to go to my dad's for the weekend, I didn't like him. I got these terrible migraines until I couldn't go. Mm. My parents expected me to be so good at exams, and then I got these terrible panic attacks. Couldn't go to school anymore. No one expected me to pass the exam. So now they're beginning to see that their issue had a role and a function and an intention. It had a job. And you go, okay, so yeah. So we had a girl who had such bad migraines that began when her father began to tell her job was to take over the family law firm. She said, I don't want to be a lawyer. Well, you must be. I paid for your education. You're my only child. If I had a son, he would have done it. Oh, now I've got to be a lawyer. But when she started to get chronic migraines, well, you'd be lucky if you'd be a waitress. You can possibly be a lawyer. It's like, oh, got out of that. And even tiny children, I worked with this little boy who had contact dermatitis everywhere. Well, every night I stand like that and mummy puts bandages, cream and wet bandages on my body. And while she's putting them on, it takes so long, doesn't put any cream on, that baby. So now you unpick that. He doesn't want to put cream on the baby, wanted to put cream on him. Doesn't take a genius to work out that at some stage he said, Mummy, can I have a massage? No, it's just for the baby. Mummy, can you put cream in? No, you're grown up. And he thought a thought. I want Mummy to put cream on me. And here's the thing. Your mind is the genie. Your wish is its command. I want Mummy to put cream on me. The genie's like, I do that. Now you've got dermatitis. Mummy's putting lots of cream on you. Maybe you've got psoriasis. And the genie doesn't think, shall I find a good way, a logic? It just finds a way. But then you just have to talk to the genie better and it will find a better way.
Yeah, God, I love the way you think. I love the way you break it down. In just me researching you, so this is the second time that we've done an interview together. Third time really, because you interviewed me.
Yeah, I did.
And in diving deep into you this time, As I was listening to you talking about these different things, I had a realization. I'm like, I've been in this space for years and I only had a realization because you breaking it down like that, I started to really think about myself and I was just reflecting, okay, what does this mean? I used to get bullied for my looks when I was a teenager. And so I've definitely attached worthiness to looks. But it never occurred to me until I was hearing you talk about really young kids. When I was really young, I was so freaking cute. And I got, and people used to say, you get away with murder. Yeah. You wanna talk about words? Growing up, literally from the age of like 3 to the age of like probably 6, I was told every day, you're so cute, you're gonna get away with murder, you're so cheeky, I could do naughty things. And my mom, she's so cheeky. And then at the age of 6, I started to change. I then hit puberty. I started getting the frizzy hair. I started getting the moustache. I started getting the unibrow. And everything went away. And not only was I not getting any attention, I was getting the opposite.
Yeah.
And so as I was hearing you talking and breaking things down from how things go from even just like a real young child to your teenage years to your adult years, I've carried that with me in the attachment of your looks were then equate to worth, and if you don't have the looks, then you're not worthy. And it wasn't until the last, you know, let's say 5 years that I've done my own mental work and everything that you're saying to change that. But it never dawned on me that I had the two flips from the kid to the teenage years.
Yeah, you've got to be very careful what you say around children. It's like people say, you're so lovely, I could eat you. What a weird thing for a parent to say. Your kid is great. Yeah, come at 2 o'clock in the morning, you can have him. You know, we say really strange things in front of our kids and it really freaks them out. They just, and nearly died having you, it killed me. You gotta be so careful because so many of us don't understand that before 5, there's no logic, just feeling. A child doesn't have logic. So when dad says, well, I still love you, but I'm leaving mummy, they hear, I don't love you. You gotta be so careful, they're so easily rejected. Why can't you draw inside the lines like your brother, your sister didn't get food all over the floor. And then you get teachers going, oh, I had your sister. The brains ran out when they got to you. And children hear so many wounding things. We can't make it perfect.
Sure.
But you have to, as a parent, say to your kid, look, you're special just the way you are. You don't have to be good at maths or don't compare yourself to other people, just be you.
And as an adult then, you think it's important to go that far back to the 5-year-old self? Because I hear a lot now people are talking about the inner child.
Oh yeah, beyond that, you can go back to, you know, I've worked with so many people with unexplained infertility, which is a fascinating label because it means It's unexplainable. Your ovaries are great, your womb's great, your husband's sperm is like military grade sperm, swims straight, there's tons of it. So your infertility is unexplained. But then people would come in and we'd always go back to the genie and the wish, and they'd often say things like, yeah, it's so bizarre. I can remember my mother carrying me on her hip. I said, it was awful. I nearly died. I bled for 3 days. I was in act, never again. Or my mother would say later, oh yes, Lena, that you ruined my body. I was in agony after I had you. I cried for 5 days. I got postnatal depression. And a child thinks, oh, I don't want to go through that. And so many times when we're babies, we're sponges. Babies pick up everything. They're pure sensation. They pick up the tone of your voice. They pick up the look on your face. And I was doing a group session once, and this very successful city guy started to sob and sob and sob. And he said, every time my dad changed my diaper, he'd make a face. He'd go, oh, this is disgusting. He said, and I really felt he didn't love me. Mm. I always felt disconnected. I just worked with somebody recently for my book who said that when her mum was pregnant with a second baby, her father put a gate up so she couldn't get out of her bedroom and come and get into bed with her mother, which she always did. And he said, no, you can't go in mummy's arms. He thought she would dislodge the new baby. And he was very concerned that she must get used to not being in mum's arms. And then suddenly the new baby's come and she's behind this stair gate she can't get. And she said, I've always felt this anger towards my dad, and I never knew why. He's a lovely guy, but I've been so angry with him. I started to really act out as a teenager to punish him, and I never knew. It's because when I was 2, I couldn't express the rage. Mm. I just knew it was his fault. He got between me and my mum, and I internalized it. It's really interesting how you can really go back to being tiny, which shouldn't be surprising, because before 5, you are pure feeling. All you can do is feel. But don't feel that. Don't get angry. Don't cry. I'll smack you if you cry. I'll punish you if you're angry. Then we think, what can I do with these feelings? So we just have to internalize them.
That's so fascinating, especially because we started talking about the feelings that come from the words that you use in your head. But thinking about being a kid and not even having words to use. So your feelings are being attached to words that other people are saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it's honestly, so
I'd be
confusing.
Petrified to have children. Oh my God, using this word is going to mess them up. Obviously, that's not a reason to not have kids.
All you have to do with kids is own it and go, darling, I messed up today. They know life isn't perfect. It's not about that. It's about you owning your mistakes and saying, you know, you're allowed to make a mess. You're allowed to break stuff. You're allowed to be age appropriate. You know, you're running in the park, I shout, stop. You wouldn't expect your puppy to stop until the third time. And so why would you expect your kid to stop? They do age appropriate. They get food on the floor. They mess up. And it's really about forgiving them, forgiving yourself, but always saying that was my fault. I messed up today. You deserve better. And then they're completely okay.
Because you're teaching them that it's okay to mess up.
Yeah, it's okay to, they can mess up, which then means that you can mess up. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't expect them to be perfect, they won't expect you to. I mean, so many parents do the wildest things like, you know, my kid can't answer back. Well, good luck with that when some 15-year-old says, let's have sex in the back of the car, because you've taught them they can't say no.
Huh.
My kid doesn't answer back. So what are you going to do when their friend says, let's go shoplifting? It's fun. Come on. Someone's going to offer your kid drugs. If you don't allow them to argue back and to have an opinion, how are they going to have an opinion? That's why they get really unbearable when they're like 15, because they're learning to argue back so that when someone says, let's take drugs, let's get wasted, let's go and steal someone's credit card, you want to have the one that goes, you know what, that doesn't feel good for me, because you've allowed them to have an opinion.
Wow, that was really strong.
Yeah.
I can talk to you forever, girl. Where can people find you and all the amazing things that you're doing? You said your book.
So marissapeer.com is where we have a ton of free gifts. You know, I know what's wrong with people. So we've created an audio for everything. Wealth wiring, love wiring, health wiring, success wiring, money blocks, love blocks. They're all free. We don't ask for your credit card. Go to marissapeer.com. There's a ton of free gifts designed to make you feel good about you. If you want to train in RTT.com and do what I do, you don't need a background in therapy, or you might want to find someone who is trained in RTT.com in your area. And because of COVID, all of our therapists are trained to do this online, to do it on Skype, to do it on Zoom. Go to RTT.com. My new book, Tell Yourself a Better Lie, is coming out in January. We're excited about that.
I'm so excited for that girl. Guys, go check her out. This woman is freaking awesome. If you're not subscribed and this episode did bring you value, press that subscribe button down there. Guys, if you're not following me, follow me at Lisa Bilyeu. And until next time, be the hero of your own life. Peace out, guys.